The Daily Maverick Show on cliffcentral.com.
Good afternoon. You're live with us for the Daily Maverick Show on cliffcentral.com. My name is Kingsley Kipuri, as usual, and I'm going to be your host for the next hour. Joined in studio by Ranjani Munasami. Ranjani, always good to have you in studio. We were trying to figure out what's going on between, like, how long ago the elections actually were. I was talking, we were trying to actually count. Was that 2 weeks ago? Was that 7 weeks ago? We just couldn't figure it out.
I think the last I came was before the elections, right?
Yeah.
And it was just, like, since then, we've been to the ANC Siyangoba rally, and then the elections, and then that massive counting process, and then the shock of the results, and then, the tension over what would happen with the coalitions, then the announcements by the EFF and DA that, like, changed things so massively.
I mean, that's a pretty solid roundup.
Yeah. And then the actual establishment of the councils, and then yesterday, the crowning of Herman Mashaba.
Not to mention a Remember Kwesi protest thrown in the mix.
Yeah.
And Olympics. I was hoping you mentioned Olympics. Just on the side note, I've been trying to follow the 3 a.m. races and try to just, like, in the morning see the highlights of what's going on.
Yeah, you know, it was strange because there's this mix between this hard politics and then, you know, this display of human excellence at the Olympics. It sends you on this emotional roller coaster.
Yeah, and patriotism. Yeah. Like, on one hand, it's just uncritical patriotism. Yeah. It's like, it's us, it's a nation.
And I mean, the way the country also rallied behind the athletes has been, something else to behold. And I think that, Caster Semenya has been through such torment, but I think on the other way of looking at it is the way the country stood up for her and stood up to the rest of the world and the bullies in the rest of the world. That has really been a triumph.
I mean, that was so cool, just seeing the hashtag hands off Caster. And I remember people saying they have to set their alarms not just for the race, so that when people start tweeting about it when the race is on, that they're there to fight back for her.
And yeah, I that and was there, like, was some massive snatching of wigs.
I like that snatching.
Going on, you know, with her competitors that were such bitter.
Yes, I forget
losers.
The lady's name, but she said she's the first.
Something is.
Is it Sharp?
Yeah, Lindsay Sharp.
So. And
not
she said
so
she's
sharp.
The first. I think she said she's the first European athlete and the first white athlete or something like that. She considers herself silver medalist or something like that.
Yeah.
Basically discounted the top three people who were black Africans.
She needs like a wooden medal for.
I was thinking if they could disqualify her based on, you know, the Olympics always has these values and Olympic values.
Bad sportswoman.
Yeah, I know they do the
bad
opposite. I know they do the opposite, where when people help each other up, like if you fall and I help you up or something, they they award those people.
Yeah,
but I wonder if they do the opposite, where if you're an asshole, if they take away your fifth place thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, no. Okay. Anyway. And we still haven't figured out who made the tracksuits yet. We still don't know the tender for the tracksuits.
Oh my gosh. At least Caster's fit her a little bit. Clads and Wade's looked horrendous.
It looks borrowed. It looks like you go to your big brother, like, I need to go to Olympics. Can I borrow your tracksuits? Anyway, you can tell I've been dying to talk about Olympics. But for the people who actually want to know what we're on about, as Ranjani mentioned, we'll talk about the local government elections. So we haven't had a show on this since prior to the elections. We were throwing forward and we were hypothesizing and we were forecasting what could happen. And last week we said, you know what, let's focus on Marikana, which was something that we really need to talk about. And also because a lot of the election results were still coming, not results, but the discussions were still happening. And we said, you know what, let's wait for things to be a lot more final before we speak again. And now that's now done, right? So all the hung municipalities have been decided either through council votes or coalition agreements. I think Ekurhuleni, that's happening right now, if I'm not mistaken. But the rest
I think that's the only outstanding one. Yeah.
I think that's the only one that's happening as we speak. So it's time to actually sort of dig into this. So I'm curious. I mean, Greg, you haven't spoken yet, but I'm curious. And when you see this, and you see that the ANC wasn't able to get a majority in 5 out of 8 of the metros in the country, you see the drop in the national vote from 62% down to, you know, just under 54%. Is that something that we could have predicted a year ago?
I think predicting the ANC's loss in support in these elections would have been like predicting Leicester's win in the Premier League last year. But of course, we did know, looking at the 2014 election results, that there were these sort of key battleground metros, because the ANC significantly declined in support in Nelson Mandela Bay, Tswana, and Johannesburg. But I don't think there was anyone really that predicted. It sort of seemed fairly clear that the DA would take either with a sort of Hung Municipality and a later coalition take Nelson Mandela Bay. But Tswana and Joburg, I think particularly Joburg, I don't think anyone predicted the ANC's serious decline in support in these regions, or necessarily that the DA would be able to get these sort of coalition agreements, well, not necessarily coalition agreements, but get support for leadership positions from the economic freedom fighters. I think that was, you know, it's just sort of like, it's hard to even believe what's happened in the last, you know, last few weeks, where we now have a DA mayor in Joburg, DA mayor in Tswane, because of the EFF's decision to vote for the Democratic Alliance.
It was crazy, and we were talking, and even people who wanted like the DA to be very successful, extremely surprised, and they're just like, even we did not anticipate this.
So I think the DA
is the most surprised of everyone.
It was such a fascinating experience being at the IEC during the counting process. And being in that pressure cooker situation as the results come in and you get to watch how people react.
In real time when the number comes up.
It was such an amazing experience. And, you know, you see people's insecurities, you see their triumphs, you see their anger. And from the NC, from that table where the NC officials were, there was a lot of anger and disappointment. And at lots of times, resentment against opposition parties. And with the DA, they had a highly organized team of real nerds pouring through the figures and things. And then they had, you know, MPs walking around it. When you chat to them, I think that some of them were caught off guard. They were, they did not expect, for example, Joburg's results to be what it was. I think they certainly were expecting that result in Nelson Mandela Bay, and that is why they sort of, were shot out of the gates straight away with that and announced it.
Yeah, they even called that.
Yeah, they called it early. And with Tswane, I think they knew it was going to be an uphill battle. I think that was, you know, their fervent hope that they would get the capital, but in the last few weeks, the NC really went all out on that campaign trail. Wow. They pulled everything they had. They had major celebs. They were all over the place. They were dabbing, you know, and doing fashion shows, and that Siyangoba rally was something to behold. It's the ANC's history, magnificence, its organizational power all on display. So it was difficult to read. I actually thought they pulled back a little bit. I didn't think that they would lose Joburg. I really didn't think. I thought they would retain Joburg, because when you saw that display of power there, it looked as if they had grabbed back some confidence. But, you know, when you think through it, and I certainly hope there's some deep thinking, when you think through it, there's been so much hurt and pain. For a lot of people in this country, the ANC is not just a political organization. There is something deeper. There's something that's inexplicable about the ANC. And for them to, you know, there were people who voted against the ANC. There were people who made a conscious decision to vote for other parties. And there were people who just stayed away.
Yeah.
And all three of those categories of people need to be analyzed, by the ANC. So, you could see that, there the IEC, the way the ANC officials were reacting, is that they also thought they pulled it back. You know, they also thought Nkandla and the Guptas and things would not be factors in this election. It turns out they were. And the major factor, which the ANC did not count on being such a differentiator in this election, was President Jacob Zuma.
I think as well, when we look back to our expectations, there were signs there, like I mentioned, the past election results with the declining support for the ANC, as well as the Constitutional Court judgment against the President and Nkandla, the ideas of state capture. There was a lot of negative press and serious issues that were coming out about certain national leadership in the ANC. Combined, if we can, in retrospect, we can look at the DA's very long and hard-fought campaign. They started campaigning much, much earlier than the ANC did. The DA sort of confidence on these issues, the role that the EFF has played in casting doubt and bringing sort of a new level of severe criticism to the ANC. But then I think I think it's also just change, such serious change and such rapid change is so unexpected. Because the ANC has been in power in these municipalities for so long.
Yeah, I think you'd expect more of a steadier decline.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. It's sort of, I think just for that factor, that no one would predict that things would change in the biggest municipalities in the country so soon.
I think the one amazing thing also is that even the DA has been, their narrative is that by 2024, there could be a party in power. Like, the EFF talks big. They say they're getting a government in waiting.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that, the EFF, just now. But the DA has been saying, you know, that they're counting on 2024 as a, you're up to now. But when you look at things now, you know, the prospect of President Maimane is very real. You know, it's you never would have thought it possible, like, you know, a month ago. But look where we are.
A month ago, I remember with some friends and colleagues, and I was saying, you know, we could have Mayor Mashaba almost as a joke.
And it was the biggest joke in the world. Everybody's
everyone's
laughing.
Like, Mayor Herman, Mayor Herman. And now he's the mayor today.
Ranjani, you mentioned like a bunch of the big national issues, so things like Nkandla and so on. And I'm curious how much weight you think voters put on that in a local election. Do you think people are going on and they're thinking of Kandla and they're thinking of perhaps Fees Must Fall and the Guptas and some of the issues at Eskom or SAA? Or do you think they're thinking more around, you know, water provision in the areas, electricity? How localized do you think people go into these elections thinking? Or do you think they take the whole party and the national issues into their voting decision?
Look, I don't think people compartmentalize the way they look at politics. I think, you know, life in South Africa has become really hard for lots of people. And, you know, pre-apartheid, I still have, a memory of the hardships during those days. Like for my parents, my family, just, you know, going from one place to another was so hard. And, you know, the difficulties my own parents faced. And, you know, life has been good for me. You know, I've been able to get an education. I've been able to prosper in my life. But, you know, when I look around at people from the community I come from in Northern KZN, and, you know, in different places, is that life gets hard. Life is hard in South Africa, you know, for with so many people unemployed, with just being able to afford food, with not being able to get jobs for lots and lots of years. Yeah. I'll give you an example for, you know, I come from a mining town. That mine closed many years ago, and many people who lost their jobs then have never been able to get it back and have lost hope. And so when you have all those millions of people like that who have no more hope, and then when you think about, you know, this elite layer in society, people elected to serve us, living the way they do, behaving the way they do, I think all of that, you know, manifests a certain thought process in people's minds. And when they look at how difficult their own lives are, and when they look at the kind of opulence of 246 million being spent on a house, one house, of this looting of the state, of disrespecting people, you know, things like terms like dirty votes, those kinds of things. I think all of that builds up and builds up. And, you know, I know people who were so worked up about going to vote on that day because they had made conscious decisions not to vote ANC. And that was a hard decision for them. You know, it's like taking a decision against your parents, your grandparents, and saying, I'm taking a new path now. I'm making a different choice. And that's difficult. And that's what I'm saying, that for people to do that, there is many, many factors that would have went into that decision. And therefore, all those things that we do count and we do talk about, all those national issues, all do impact on that decision, on top of local issues such as bad service delivery and councillors would disrespect their communities.
I mean, I love that sort of incoherent picture you've painted. Not incoherent, but it's not as neat and said, these are my thoughts on the national part, on the sort of national issues. These are my thoughts on local issues. Sorry, Greg, I cut you off.
No, I was going to say, I think past results have shown that people are more willing to change their vote in local government elections, suggesting that they're willing to, that they're looking more at local government issues and not necessarily just going to go with their consistent party. But I think, like Ranjani is saying, in this election, the national issues really did have perhaps a stronger role to play than in the past, because when combined with all these sort of local issues, it reflected quite poorly on the ANC. And I remember when I interviewed Barksdale, Johannesburg Mayor Barksdale, before the local government elections, he said, I asked him what sort of role will national ANC issues play, and he said that he doesn't think that they're really going to come into play significantly. People have looked at what the ANC in Johannesburg done and will hopefully vote accordingly. Yeah. But then even the ANC in Johannesburg in its press conference on Sunday admitted that actually while they think they've done a good job, and the voters often believe that in Johannesburg they've done a good job, local government issues in these elections were overshadowed by national issues, like they mentioned the Constitutional Court judgment against the president, like e-tolls and so on.
Yeah, I think that the ANC in Joburg did try and cushion itself, the ANC in Gauteng actually did. That was their strategy, to try and focus on the achievements in Gauteng, in Johannesburg. But I think there were so many other factors impacting on that. Tswane was imploding. The ANC in Tswane was imploding. I think that the factional battles, the whole image of the ANC in Gauteng, it's trying to assert itself, where it's running this uphill battle in constant conflict with the national ANC. And I think that their constituency is different from the rest of the country. You have people who have access to a lot of information. Yeah. There's a variety of media platforms in Gauteng, for example. There's plenty of radio stations. People have more access to smartphones, so they have access to social media.
Echo chamber, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So there's lots of voices. There's more. People consume news from media, from newspapers, and therefore they had a different fight to what you would have in my place, in Dannhauser or in Kimberley, for example. So, and they were aware, their own research showed that, that there was, they had big perception problems to confront, and that there was a lot of negativity around the ANC. And they ran a different campaign to try and manage that, but the ANC nationally wouldn't allow that. They still believed that President Zuma should be top of the ticket. He should be the face of the campaign, and that he should basically lead the narrative and the messaging. And that backfired. A massive part of the ANC's constituency in Gauteng turned against them. And unfortunately for the ANC in Joburg, their deployees in the city performed really well. Parks Tower is really someone who epitomizes a good story to tell. But unfortunately, yesterday I was saying on Twitter that he is the biggest victim of these local government elections. Yeah. And it really is. It's a tragic story. It's really a sad story that someone who worked that hard had to fall, and you have people who continue to waste public taxpayers' money, be useless at their jobs. They're there. Sometimes you don't see them for months. There's some ministers I actually forgot they exist, and they're still in their jobs. And someone like Parks Tower has to lose his job.
I mean, I hear you on Gauteng, and I remember prior to the elections when we were talking sort of forecasting potential strategy, is that if there was a way they could have isolated themselves from national issues, perhaps not have Zuma on their posters and at rallies, not have him front and center. But surely that would have to come from a concession within the party that there was something to be shielded from.
Yeah, but this is the thing. I think this is the one thing about this election that is still not getting through to the national leadership, is the image of President Zuma. I see after the NEC meeting, Greg was there when they announced that they would take collective responsibility for the failings of the ANC, and they still refuse to acknowledge that President Zuma is different. People perceive him differently. People. When they talk about what has gone wrong, he is factor number one. And the NEC has failed to acknowledge that. I think that the ANC in Gauteng did try and work around that, but they were not allowed to.
You mentioned the NEC, and I remember reading Greg, I think you wrote an article on this, about the steps they said they would take post-elections. And the first thing is they said that the issue of President Zuma was not up for discussion or for reflection. Is it possible for an honest reflection of the ANC to begin with saying we will not you know, discuss or we will not reflect on the issue of Zuma being the president. Does that already just discount the whole process?
I think it partly does. If the president's role isn't up for discussion,
yeah.
Well, I think they sort of inferred that, you know, there was some sort of people trying to raise issues about the president, but his role continuing to be the president is certainly not up for discussion. But on the one hand, I do see what the ANC leaders like Gwede Mantashe are saying when they say that we can't just blame President Zuma because where was the rest of the ANC leadership this time? We're always talking about taking collective decisions and sort of making our doing everything we do with collective responsibility and collective action, because that's the history of what the ANC is. So now we can't just put our finger on one guy. And that's true, because then it shows that the sort of, if you want to just blame Zuma, why didn't the NEC call him to account before?
Yeah,
but
okay.
I think the key problem is they didn't call him to account before. They let things slide, and both Zuma and that collective NEC must take responsibility not only on the ANC's performance in these elections, but for allowing the negative perceptions of President Zuma to continue without being confronted when it should have been. I think that's one of the key problems. They have to look at Zuma's problem and sort of reflect on their own
complicity,
yeah. because it wasn't Zuma that necessarily made the apology to. Accepted his apology.
He didn't accept his own apology.
That's right. Yeah. It was the NEC that accepted his apology for the Nkandla stuff. Yeah. And I think they all have to actually look at the run up to all these issues that they've sort of created.
But even before that, you remember the gathering 2015 when Paul Mashatile spoke about how the NEC had not endorsed the Nkandla upgrades and further upgrades to Nkandla. And even before that, you know, it's now well known that he has said repeatedly in the meetings of the National Executive Committee, guys, let's pay. He didn't even say you pay. He said, guys, let's pay, meaning let us pay. You know, let if there is this collective decision, let us make a collective decision to pay this thing. That would have been a way to manage the way.
Yeah, and try to make it go away. It's like, I apologize, and he looks benevolent. Like,
since even before the Public Protector's Report was released in March 2014, there were opportunities for the ANC to maneuver out of this mess. And consequent to the release of the report, there were hundreds of opportunities that the ANC could have taken to walk away from it, to wash their hands of it, or to help the president, you know. But we've seen what they did in Parliament, you know, and that caused a lot of anger, the way the ANC caucus dealt with that Nkandla report. And it ran from there all the way to the Constitutional Court. And, you know, in all that time, they had opportunities. Then they get, you know, the matter is then set down to be heard by the Constitutional Court. Suddenly the president says, oh, I'll pay. You know, that leaves the ANC with so much egg on its face.
Yeah.
Because he basically just left them dangling. Because all the time they were saying he shouldn't pay. And, you know, the Minister of Police produced that ridiculous report saying why you shouldn't pay.
Yeah.
And then he said, oh, I'll pay. And then the Constitutional Court came out with the judgment it did. And that was an indictment on everyone, including the ANC. So, yes, I think, you know, when it comes to collective responsibility, yes, there should be collective responsibility because, yes, they all were responsible for the mess. But they should also remember who is at the center of the mess. And that is what they're refusing to do. But that being said, while I was coming here, the ANC was holding a media briefing. Gwede Mantashe was holding a media briefing. And so I caught a bit of it. And he does seem to have a slight difference in tone.
Mm.
I think that there's now more, I think the shock of what's happened in the municipalities. Yeah, I think that the ANC is now beginning to accept the full extent of what has happened. And I think that, you know, that they're more somber. They're less kind of... you know, with the dismissive of what has happened. And one really astounding thing that Gwede Mantashe said, I still need to look at the context in which the statement was made, but he said he was willing to step down and call an early conference if that would help. Now, That is a major statement from the ANC Secretary General. I don't know what the question was that prompted it. So I need, as I say, I need to look at the context. Yeah. But the fact that he said that and he's put that on the table, you must know that the ANC Youth League has so far called for that. Mm. They include very different factions. So it's an interesting development. I'm sure it's something that's going to be playing out in the next few days and weeks. So I think that the ANC is on its knees now. It is beginning to think deeper. So that's something to watch.
I mean, that's interesting. I mean, Greg, you mentioned the press release came out just now, and that's happening. Is that press conference happening? It's happening right now.
It's finished.
So it's on Twitter, and we'll sort of have a look at what exactly came out of that. Just quickly on the strategy leading up to local government elections. I mean, we've talked a lot about the ANC. I think DA, I mean, we've spoken a bit about this, and I think it's fair to say that they've done extremely well at dispelling this idea that it's a white party, or that it's, you know, it's a national party, you know, in new dress, or that it's going to bring apartheid back. I think they've done, you know, extremely well at that. And this constant message of harping on that they govern better, where the DA governs, things work. I think we can agree Musa Mamani has done extremely well at least those two things.
No, I think it's very difficult to convince the whole electorate that it's not a white party or necessarily that they govern better, but I think they've convinced more people, and they've done pretty well, I think, in dispelling the notion, especially that they're going to bring apartheid back. So I think they've done very well on that front, although some people will still criticize them as a risk of that. But I think they've really lessened that greatest worry that voting the DA will you know, lead to sort of certain laws that might have been around in apartheid to return. And I think sort of Musi Mamani even himself is a product of this, I think. That the party has really, in its messaging, in the leaders it puts out there, in the sort of advertising campaigns, and even its decision to be on the ground marching on government and ANC offices, it's done well in terms of putting black members at the forefront and promoting young black leaders. And I think that has really helped dispel this sort of worry. And then at the same time, as you said, they've continued to push this thing home, that the DA, where the DA governs, it governs better. Yeah. And, you know, they cite all the statistics and stuff like that, but it's almost just become like a mantra.
Yeah, it's just a fact now. It's the DA governs better.
In everybody's mind. And I think those two factors, I think, significantly helped people maybe give the DA a chance or cast further doubt on the ANC. So I think that strategy that they've been working on for years has effectively worked. You didn't see them win majorities in these sort of areas, but it got them over the line to form these coalition agreements.
And all the issues we've just mentioned of the ANC's actual slip-ups, the DA was really good at capitalizing on that. So anytime something came out of parliament, anytime there was a misstep by the ANC, the DA tried to be front and center of that. Of the backlash against that.
Well, when it comes to capitalizing on the ANC's weaknesses, I think nobody's done that better than the EFF.
There we go. Mm.
The EFF has really taken that into a different league. But I think with the DA, they're different schools of thought, one of which is Julius Malema's statement at his media briefing. They're the lesser of the two evils. Mm. I think many people do think of it in that way.
Okay.
The other thing is that some people believe that it's time for change and they needed to give another party a chance.
Yeah, just give another party
somebody else.
It's something else has to be better than what we have now. I think some people have accepted the DA's messaging. They do believe that that the DA has its heart in its right place. It has the correct approach. And I think, you know, that there's a large amount of people who are also just so disenchanted and so fed up that they could have gone into the polling booth, looked at the ballot paper and just like put their fingers over the ANC and crossed somewhere else, you know, for one of the other opposition parties.
Just go for the AIC.
Yeah. I was just about to say that's how the AIC got their vote.
The AIC is really a phenomenon.
That needs its own show.
You want to say that? Yeah, but I think that we mustn't take anything away from this new leadership of the DA as well. You know, Musi Maimane's only been in his job as leader of the Democratic Alliance for 1 year. You know, I could never have done what he has done. There are millions of people who could never have done what he has done. His is a real South African success story. You know, and we mustn't take that away. There's a lot of people who torment him about his accent, about whatever, you know. But he is a young black South African who defied the odds, who came out of nowhere. He's been in politics only for 6 years. You know, he's tried, he's dabbled in so many things. Mm. He was thrown in the deep end to take over the Democratic Alliance only 2 years ago. Only a year ago. Yeah. He was a parliamentary leader of only 2 years. And it's a massive success story. And, you know, he is one person I think that needs to be applauded for being able to carry himself with some dignity throughout this process. There's a lot of indignity in South African politics. It's a huge mess. And sometimes, you know, you get home after, you know, a day of being out there and you want to like shower in jik, you know, because there's just so much of murkiness in South African politics. But he's tried to be the good guy in this, you know, and I think that there's some acknowledgement from the electorate that, yeah, you know, let's give this guy a chance.
Maybe we don't know too much, like, regardless of the party, we see you. And we respect you, we can do that.
He's a son of a domestic worker, you know, and look where he is now. It's a great story.
I mean, that's worth saying, that the 12 months, I had forgotten that it had been just a year. And I remember all the ridicule a year ago of like, are you kidding me?
Yes.
Helen Zille, you put this puppet in front of us and you think we don't know it's still you. And that was the joke, that you're doing.
And he's been called. He took it, he accepted it. He's been called all sorts of names. He's been insulted in the worst ways.
Yeah.
And he's done the thing, you know? It's a good story.
Okay. I'm glad that we don't have enough sort of positivity. Mm-hmm. As you know, I get depressed a lot. So I'm glad that we had like a happy shining moment for a second. You mentioned the EFF and how they've taken in terms of strategy, and how they've taken this idea of capitalizing on the ANC's missteps, and they've taken that to a new ball game. I mean, we saw the Gupta saga and them really make sure that was front and center of the national dialogue, probably for much longer than it would have been in the absence of the EFF. And they made sure that we would not forget that. Nkandla as well is worth saying that they made sure that was, you know, front page of every newspaper, you know, for ages. Getting kicked out of parliament and them taking that and making sure that was something that people were continue to talk about and be outraged about. And they took any little opportunity they could get to make sure that they were the topic of the discussion, and that they were setting the national agenda in terms of what people were frustrated about, or angry about, or cared about. And that is, in terms of just strategy and political strategy and making sure that people are paying attention to you and taking you seriously, I think there has to be, like, in terms of strategy, that's incredible. In response to that?
You know, in, was it 2013, yeah, Greg, when you and I went to go and interview Julius Malema?
Yeah, mid-2013, wasn't it? Yeah, was just but forming.
That was when he was...
I didn't even know if he had a name for them then.
No, he didn't. He was saying, that's the day he told us that he was forming a political party. And I really wanted to laugh.
But did you take it? Yeah, was it serious? Or it sounded like it was a joke. Yeah.
I said, like, how did you come to this decision? I said, Floyd and I finished exams and we thought, what should we do now? And I really did laugh, you know. I just thought, you know, like when you finish exams, you get drunk and, you know, do weird things.
So that's
you
what Julius does after exams.
You do not form a political party, that was his decision. And when I look at it now, 3 years later, it's absolutely incredible. He's had the tiger by the tail from that moment on. You know, the ANC has been so disorientated by the EFF. They cannot anticipate their next move. They definitely did not anticipate this move that they made to vote for the DA but not go into coalition. It threw them completely. And you've seen that in parliament as well, you know, that the way the ANC, the way the EFF sort of put into that Nkandla issue and just would not let go. They got assaulted, they got chucked out of parliament, they got all sorts of things happened to them. They just kept going and going and going. And then suddenly he announces, I'll see you in court. And look what happened in court. The president of the Republic of South Africa was found to be in violation of the constitution. The EFF did that. It's another incredible story. And I think that, you know, people underestimated Julius Malema a lot when they when he was expelled from the ANC. They thought, that's it. He's finished and clear. We're never going to see him again. He's going to, you know, there's so many politicians in South Africa who, like, were in the heyday and then disappeared, never to be heard of again. He changed that now. He grabbed the niche, he occupied it, and he's just been like bolting ever since. And I think there's something to be learned from him, you know, in terms of thinking out of the box. And I think, you know, I've been reporting on politics since 1994. And this guy just keeps surprising me in terms of how he thinks. You know, last Wednesday, I was sitting, we were at the EFF media briefing in Alex, and I was sitting looking at him there, and I thought, you are 35 years old. You are holding the attention of the entire country.
Yep.
And he's 35 years old, you know? And he came out, well, the EFF leadership came out with this formula. And look what they've done. They've redefined the political space. And I think, you know, that he is going to continue to do that. One thing he hasn't done, though, is the one failure of the EFF is that they didn't get control of any municipality in this election. They did not meet their own targets. But they are continue to be strategic thinkers in the political space. So in order to continue to have relevance and to meet their targets in 2019, they need to continue to do what they are doing now and do it well.
I mean, there was a sense of disappointment, about them not getting I think they were pretty set on Limpopo, and at least and a lot
getting
of people thought they're getting one
there.
Municipality in Limpopo.
I think it would have been fantastic for them to get one municipality, and so we could see actually how they governed.
Yeah,
we could see their model in action.
We've been pretty hard on their manifesto and their model, and you know, saying it's unworkable and how it's going to work. So it'd have been great to actually see and for them to be able to say.
And they had that
like.
Opportunity with Rustenburg, I think, if they had formed that coalition with the DA. But they opted out of a coalition and rather decided that, well, the electorate did not give them control of a municipality. They're not, Julius' words were, I'm not going to take it through the back door. So, you know, it is unfortunate because I think, you know, a lot of people do want to see what they...
Please take it to the back door so we can see what you do.
Whether this rhetoric means anything, whether it's actually feasible.
I think the EFF's decision on who to support in these elections and whether, you know, whether to take these positions or not, for me, that's one of the most interesting stories of the whole local government elections. Like Ranjini was saying, no one could predict, I don't think, that the EFF would give the DA support in these sort of hung metros and opposition parties in certain other areas without asking for anything else in return.
I mean, yeah, and we were talking about this, and it sounded like Julius Malema almost set that up at the IEC when he gave the options they had. And he said, he gave three options,
right.
And I mean, whether he knew what they were going to do.
He said coalitions, re-vote, or we could abstain from voting.
We can abstain, and he gave three options. So I think that kind of set all our minds into three options. So coming out and taking a fourth option, and as you say, giving away their power for free, one might say.
On the one hand, and I would have loved to hear some of the sort of debate within the EFF about what this decision as to what to do. On the one hand, you know, you hear some sort of EFF supporters and particularly ANC supporters criticizing the EFF, saying, look, they've given power to, you know, what's still perceived by some or many as to be a white party who are ideologically opposite from the EFF's values.
Yeah, like they've sold out already. They've just started and they've sold out. Yeah.
On the other hand, I see it as a, you know, very strategic move by first getting the ANC out of government while trying to maintain the principles of the EFF and the integrity of the EFF by not taking positions and becoming too perhaps stained by the criticism of the DA and also the responsibility in some of the decisions the DA will be bound to take while they're in government. And I think at the end of the day, it's hard to say, you know, what would have happened otherwise, but I think it's a very strategic and very clever move from the EFF.
You agree, Nanjani? Genius or a complete silly move by the EFF?
No, it's really, I mean, for them, it makes absolute sense. And I think that the ANC is still trying to orientate itself to being in opposition in all these these councils.
Yeah.
But I think the EFF knows exactly what they're going to give everyone their hell run. I think Salim Simanga and Herman Mashaba have no idea what they got themselves into. I think they're going to give them a real hell run. And, you know, the formula that they've come up with, they can choose to assist the DA when they want to, and they can choose to torment them when they want to. So, you know, that they then keep their revolutionary agenda, as they call it, on track. You know, it's not, as Greg says, that, you know, it's not tainted by whatever decisions that the DA makes. And I think that they keep their image as a vibrant, robust opposition party. But I think it was also a very mature move to say, we're not going to hold up delivery. You know, we're gonna make a decision to vote.
Yeah.
We're going to partner with opposition parties so that delivery can continue. But I think that I think they're going to be really aggressive, and you saw it yesterday. That you know, there was nothing that was going happening easily because of the EFF. You know, they object to every single thing, and I think, you know, the hard times ahead in South Africa's councils now with the EFF in the mix. You know, especially when it comes to the allocation of budgets, I think they're going to fight and fight hard. And therefore, you know, there's going to be a lot of, going to have to be a lot of behind the scenes groundwork with the DA contingents in these councils to be able to get support from their coalition partners now and from the EFF so that they can keep things going.
I think all the sort of... all these negotiations and discussions that have been happening between political parties over the last sort of 2 weeks since the results came out are simply just going to have to continue, because with the DA and its coalition partners and then the EFF element, they're just going, it's going to be a continual debate and, like, you know,
you can't see, but Greg is gesturing aggressively. You can't see this.
That's how challenging I think this will be.
He's doing his Hulk face.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Coalition, I think coalition governments by their very nature are extremely difficult, because everyone needs to be satisfied. Everyone sort of wants a piece of the pie, or wants a demand to be met. And there's so many interests to factor in to when things like budgets are being passed. It's extremely complex and challenging to rule by a coalition government. And in places like Johannesburg and Tswane now, it's not just a coalition government, but this weird formula where we need EFF support to pass anything.
Yeah.
So I think Ranjini is right. There's going to be a lot of sort of discussions with the EFF and sort of continually getting them on board as the DA goes forward in leading these councils. And I think sort of the role of some of the bigger leaders as well in these sort of issues could come into play. Like you saw Bantu Holomisa, guys like him really sort of seem to step up in these talks and try to provide a
kind of guidance and
a sort of moderate voice between the sort of disputing parties, you know. And so I think we're going to need leaders like that, both from the DA, EFF, and some of these coalitions, to make sure that these parties stay in discussions, trying to continue that services keep on being delivered, and that the councils are able to do the best for the people.
I think there's another way of looking at it as well, is that while there needs to be this robustness and aggressive debating of issues, I think that it's also important for all those opposition parties, the DA with its coalition partners, plus the IFP, which has a separate arrangement, plus the EFF, who has a separate arrangement, for all of them to make sure that throughout all this, that they keep the councils running, that there is progress, that there is evidence of tangible change. Because I think that they've sent an important message out to the electorate that you don't only have to do things a certain way, that voting ANC election after election, year after year, is not the only option you have. Look at these options that we now have, all different formulas in different municipalities, the different partnerships. So look at it broadly. When it comes to 2019, you can have coalitions in the different provinces. Yeah. You can have coalitions at national level. Yeah. So, you know, think out of the box and let's make this work. So it's not only about saying, okay, you're there now, let's give Herman and Mashaba a hard time.
Yeah, as hard as we can to make a point. Yeah.
To make a point. It also needs to be demonstrable that these coalitions actually work, because for 2019... that is going to be an important, I think it's going to be in people's minds that, okay, look, we can go back to make sure that, you know, vote ANC again to make sure things just move. Or we can give these other guys a chance. But the problem is that, you know, nothing happens and they all start fighting and squabbling and, there's no functionality. So that's an important factor for all these opposition parties to keep in mind.
Yeah, I think that would have been a big factor in the DA, in the EFF's reasoning is, on one hand, it's great when they're center of attention and it's great when they can be seen to be putting the poor first. But you also don't want to be the person who's always blocking anything and blocking progress. You don't want to appear to just be antagonistic for the sake.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the fine line, I think, for them between now and between national elections is how do you still be pro-poor and always appear to be pro-poor without looking like you just...
And you also, but your actions need to make sense. Okay. You can't just be a rebel for the sake
of it. Yeah.
I mean, I saw a tweet by Andile Mritama this morning saying, let's go and occupy land or something like that. And you think, okay, but so what's your, he was talking about doing it in Swane.
Okay.
Because he wants to provoke the DA to forcibly remove him. Not because he wants to give people land.
So it's not about that land specifically.
It's not about that. Yeah. It's just because he wants the DA to lock him up. And, you know, you can't make silly statements like that when you have the responsibility of leading, when people have given you their vote to lead and you have to make decisions that represent them. So Andile can make decisions because he represents himself. Nobody voted for him. So, you know, if he wants to get locked up, let him get locked up. But the thing is that all these other people carry the mandate of all those people who voted for them. Yeah. So they need to make responsible decisions.
I mean, just last thing on the EFF before we want to talk a bit about the ANC as opposition is, Greg, we talked about this before, and something that wasn't reported too much is during Julius Malema's press conference to announce the decision they've taken on the coalition or not the coalition, he spoke quite sternly and almost aggressively to people within the party who really had wanted to go in to get some positions and people, and he was super stern and aggressive about that, and I'm curious as to whether, as the EFF continues to grow, those issues will become more apparent. People who had a different plan, people who did want to exercise some kind of power in government, people who may not agree with this decision.
Yeah. I think it was very interesting to hear him so frank on those issues and really coming down hard on these EFF members who I think he said are bringing ANC tendencies into the party.
I mean,
sort of, you know, wanting jobs, wanting to take council positions, even perhaps when they didn't win the ward, but the EFF has got PR.
Yeah, seats. And wanting to take those up, yeah.
I think it's... Will it become more apparent as the EFF goes forward? I think Julius, that's what Julius is trying to do, is stamp this out right now and say, look, this is not what the EFF is about.
Yeah.
This is why we're not taking positions. We are committed to our core values and we're not in this thing to eat people's money. But obviously with politics and politics everywhere around the world, I think both there are always personal interests that come into play as well as political divisions that come into play. And I think it will be important going forward for the EFF to manage particularly the political divisions because they could... There's a possibility in the future that the EFF could see sort of splits and it could... With Julius as sort of Julius and the other sort of top six leaders, if they have quite a strong hold over the decisions of where the EFF goes, and supporters may perceive that, members may perceive that they either aren't benefiting from this or that they're being sidelined, it could sort of, you know, bring about certain fractures within the party. But I think at the moment, the EFF seem to be at least publicly appearing to come down quite hard on that.
I think an important message for the EFF to send out is how they do things differently from the ANC. And they do want to remodel their deployees and their representatives as being grounded in communities, having a different outlook and perspective on how they operate. And therefore, I think that they even said that their salaries would be cut and donated to certain projects and things like that. So, he's trying to model this contingent of workers rather than high flying politicians, mm. In fancy cars and things, he is trying to conceptualize a new type of public representative, and I think that is one of the tragedies of the EFF not getting a municipality, because it would have been really interesting to see how that would work in practice. But he's saying that they're going to try and do that in wards that they control now, to have their councillors, ward councillors and PR councillors being able to, really work in those wards that they control and deliver, even if they're not in charge of the council. So I think that is something to watch, because it moves the EFF away from all its rhetoric and, its aggressive stance against other opposition parties, to say, okay, so what exactly are you able to do? And I think that they can't do that anywhere else. They can't do it at national and provincial level so much, because they don't control anything really. All they have is representation in the legislatures. But here, where they now are controlling wards, they represent actual wards. I think that would be a real area of interest, particularly when you see how people who ANC representatives have used their positions to benefit themselves, to loot the state, and that is what has caused so much of the factional divides in the ANC and this battle for resources. And if the EFF can change that orientation of councillors, I think that would be a really progressive step.
Okay. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have.
And what? We can't even talk about ANC.
Okay. All right. Okay. Now let's get into it. We got kicked out of studio last time. Okay. What are you about to say about the double vote yesterday? No.
No, nothing about the double vote yesterday. But I think, for me going forward, one of the key issues is, it's important to point out as well, obviously we're talking about the news, and what's new is where councils have changed. But I think the ANC, as they've kept on pointing out, is that I think they've won 161 out of 213, I think, municipalities. That's not right. But anyway, the ANC still significantly.
That's what the press release says. Whether it's true is different. Yeah.
They're still significantly the dominating party across the country.
Yeah.
But for me, one of the key issues going forward is in ANC strongholds, many of their supporters did not come out to vote. But the EFF and, EFF kept voting, participating in municipal elections for the first time.
Yeah.
And DA did increase the vote a bit. But one of the key problems for the ANC was what looked like their voters actually staying at home. In the next few years, I think one of the most interesting things for me is what these voters decide to do, whether and the reasons that they did not vote at all. And so I think that's one thing we're going to have to keenly watch. Obviously, it will relate to how the ANC handles this issue themselves and how they both the strategies they implement from a national perspective, as well as in some of these areas, how they adopt to the opposition benches. But I think we're going to have to really sort of watch these issues closer and to see whether the ANC can manage to get some more of their supporters back out to vote, or whether, in fact, more ANC supporters might stay at home next time, or some of those voters might even turn to other opposition parties.
Okay, perfect. Greg is satisfied now. We're getting kicked out. Thank you so much, Greg Nicholson and Jenny Musami. Thanks for joining me. Everybody, thanks for tuning in. Remember, you can download and share the podcast. We'll see you next week, 1 to 2 p.m., same time, same place.
The Daily Maverick Show on CliffCentral.com.